Chapter 34. A small enclosed truck, painted white with no logo or advertising on its sides, rumbled past the terminal of the Jorge Newbery City Airport, located within the Federal District of Buenos Aires, and came to a stop under the shade of a maintenance hangar. The airport normally served Argentina's domestic airlines, including those that operated out of Paraguay, Chile, and Uruguay. None of the flight line workers seemed to take notice of a turquoise executive jet with Numa boldly outlined on its fuselage as it landed and taxied to the hangar where the truck was waiting. Three men and a woman came through the passenger door and stepped down to the concrete, which was heated by the noonday sun. Just as they were about to reach the maintenance office door of the hangar, they veered around the corner and approached the truck. When they were 30 feet away, the rear door opened, and four United States Marines in battle gear jumped to the ground and formed a perimeter around the vehicle. The sergeant in command then helped Congresswoman Smith, Admiral Sandecker, Hiram Yeager, and a third man enter the truck before reclosing the door. The interior of the truck was a comfortably furnished office and command post, one of 50 constructed specifically for American embassies around the world. It was designed to protect and aid embassy personnel to escape their compound in the event of attack, such as the abduction and hostage situation in Iran during November of 1979. Pitt stepped forward and embraced Lauren Smith, who was shown aboard first. "You gorgeous creature, I wasn't expecting you." Pat O'Connell felt a stab of jealousy at seeing Pitt with his arms around Lauren. The congresswoman from Colorado was far more attractive than she had imagined. "The admiral asked me to come, and there were no pressing votes on the floor, so here I am, even if it is for only a few hours." "A pity," he said sincerely. "We could have done Buenos Aires." "I would have liked that," she replied in a husky tone. Then she saw Giordino. "Al, it's good to see you." He gave her a peck on the cheek. "Always a pleasure to see my government at work." Sandecker climbed in, followed by Yeager and the stranger. He merely nodded at Pitt and Giordino. He walked directly to Pat O'Connell.
"You don't know how happy I am to shake your hand again, Doctor."
"You don't know how happy I am to be here," she said, kissing him on the forehead, to his obvious embarrassment. "My daughter and I are in your debt for sending Dirk and Al to rescue us."
"I didn't have to send them," he said wryly. "They would have gone on their own."
Yeager greeted his old friends and Pat, who was introduced to Lauren for the first time. Then Sandecker introduced Dr. Timothy Friend.
"Tim is an old school pal. He helped me pass algebra in high school. When I went to the Naval Academy, he went to the Colorado School of Mines for a degree in geophysics. Not content with that, he obtained his Ph.D. in astronomy at Stanford and became one of the country's most respected astronomers and director of the government's Strategic Computing and Simulation Laboratory. Tim is a wizard of innovative visualization techniques."
Friend's bald head was encircled by wisps of gray hair, like a school of silverfish swimming around a coral dome. A short man, he had to tilt his head back slightly to gaze up at the two women, who were considerably taller. Giordino, who stood 5'4", was the only one he could look straight in the eye. A quiet man among friends, he became outgoing and lively when lecturing before students, directors of corporations, or high government officials. It was easy to tell that he was in his element.
"Would you all care to sit down?" said Pitt, motioning to comfortable leather chairs and sofas spaced in a square in the center of the truck's cargo area.
Once they were seated, an embassy staff member served coffee and sandwiches from a small galley behind the cab.
"Lauren asked to come along," said Sandecker without preamble. "She and her congressional aides investigated Destiny Enterprises and came up with some intriguing information."
"What I found in the past 2 days is quite worrisome," Lauren began. Very quietly,
under astounding secrecy. The Wolf family and Destiny Enterprises have sold every business, every one of their shares in national and international corporations, every financial holding, all bonds, all stocks, all real estate, including every stick of furniture in their homes. All bank accounts have been cleaned out. Every asset, large and small, has been liquidated. Billions of dollars were converted into gold bullion that was transported to a secret location, where it is now stored in the cargo compartments of their fleet of ships, Pitt finished. It's as though the entire family of 200 members have never existed. These are not stupid people, Pitt said convincingly. I find it inconceivable that they are capable of irrational judgment. So is there a comet coming, or isn't there? The very reason I've asked Tim to come along, explained Sandecker. Friend laid out several small piles of papers on a table between the chairs and sofas. He picked up the first one and leafed through it before consulting his notes. Before I answer that, let me go back a bit, so you can understand what the Wolves have been preparing for. I think it best to begin with the comet's impact on Earth sometime around 7,000 BC. Fortunately, this is not an event that occurs on a regular basis. Although Earth is struck daily, it's by small asteroid fragments no larger than a fist that burn up upon entry into the atmosphere. About every century, one approximately 150 feet in diameter strikes Earth, such as the one that produced the crater in Winslow, Arizona, and the other that exploded before impact in Siberia in 1908, that plastered 800 square miles. Once every million years, an asteroid half a mile wide strikes with a force equal to detonating every nuclear device on Earth simultaneously. Over 2,000 of these big celestial missiles cross our orbit on a regular schedule. Not a pretty picture, said Pat. Don't lose any sleep over it, Friend said, smiling. Your odds of dying from an asteroid are 20,000 to 1 during your lifetime. We can't, however, discount the logical possibility that it's only a question of time before our luck runs out. Pitt poured a cup of coffee. I assume you're talking about a really stupendous bang. Indeed, said Friend, nodding vigorously. Once every 100 million years, a mammoth asteroid or comet strikes Earth, like the one that smacked into the sea off Yucatan 65 million years ago, and caused the extinction of the dinosaurs. This impact came from an object 6 miles in diameter that left a crater 120 miles wide. Friend paused to scan his paperwork before continuing. That was smaller than the one that struck 9,000 years ago. Our computer model indicates that it measured nearly 10 miles in diameter and plunged into Hudson Bay, Canada. The resulting chain reaction annihilated nearly 99% of all plant and animal life on the planet, which is 20% more than the asteroid that caused the extinction of the dinosaurs 65 million years earlier. Lauren stared at Friend with rapt interest. A chain reaction comprising what type of disasters? You take an object 10 miles in diameter, weighing several billion tons, and then hurl it through a vacuum into a big soft ball at a speed of 130,000 miles an hour, and you're going to have a blast that is gargantuan beyond comprehension. The Earth probably rang like a bell as the shock of impact was transmitted into every corner. Using computer simulation and visualization techniques, which were very complicated and would take me 2 hours to explain, we determined that the comet came on an angle, punching into the southeastern section of Hudson Bay and blasting out a crater 230 miles in diameter, or more than twice the size of the island of Hawaii. The entire mass of water in the bay was vaporized, as the bulk of the now disintegrating comet plowed into the Earth to a depth of 2 miles. Astronauts have taken photos that show a perfect sphere where the shoreline circles the remains of the crater. How do you know it was a comet and not an asteroid or meteor? Asked Yeager. An asteroid is a small body or minor planet that wanders the inner solar system and revolves around the sun. Some are rich in carbon. Others contain minerals rich in iron, silicon, and other minerals. Meteorites, for the most part, are smaller fragments from asteroids that have collided with one another and broken up. The largest ever found weighed 70 tons. A comet is quite different. It's often called a dirty snowball made up of ice, gas, and rocky dust particles. They usually travel in very long oval orbits on the outer edge of the solar system and often beyond. Because of gravitational interaction from the sun and planets, a few are diverted and orbit around the sun. When they come close to the sun, the comet's surface ice vaporizes and forms a spectacular elongated cone or tail. It's generally thought that they are leftovers from the formation of the planets. By drilling and then analyzing the composition of the microscopic debris found in and around the Hudson Bay crater, geophysicists discovered tiny particles that they identified as part of the comet that slammed into the Earth in 7000 BC. Tests revealed no traces of the usual minerals and metals associated with asteroids. "So we have impact," said Sandecker. "Then what happened?" "A measureless, inverted cone of red-hot rock, steam, dust, and debris was hurled up and above the atmosphere, only to plunge in a fiery rain back down on Earth, igniting uncontrollable forest fires around the world. Huge amounts of sulfur, shock-heated nitrogen, and great doses of fluorides were injected into the atmosphere. The ozone layer would have been destroyed, skies blotted out, as winds of hurricane strength whipped across the land and seas. Our simulation suggests this cloud of debris and smoke lasted no less than 14 months. This alone would have killed off most of Earth's life and collapsed the food chain."
"It sounds too horrible for me to imagine," said Lauren quietly.
Friend made a taut smile.
"Lamentably, that's only the opening act. Because Hudson Bay opened into the Atlantic Ocean, waves as high as 7 or 8 miles were formed that burst across the lowlands. Florida would have been totally inundated, along with most of the islands of the world. Much of Europe and Africa saw waves surging hundreds of miles inland from their shorelines. Because most of Australia's ancient inhabitants lived on or near the coasts, the continent would have suffered a 99% death rate within minutes. Southeast Asia would have been buried underwater. Vast multitudes of sea life would have been carried far inland and left to die when the giant waves finally receded. The chemical balance of the oceans was altered. What the upheaval didn't kill in the oceans, the silt, mud, and debris would. Shuddering from the comet's impact, massive earthquakes far beyond the top end of the Richter scale forever changed the dimensions of the mountains, plains, and deserts. Then volcanoes around the globe, dormant or active, erupted. Molten lava in great sheets as high as a mile stormed over whatever land wasn't submerged. If an astronaut had flown to Mars before the cataclysm and returned 2 years later, he would not have been able to recognize the world, nor would anyone he knew or loved still be alive. He could very well find himself the only man on Earth.
Pitt looked at the astronomer. "You don't paint a very pretty picture." "The aftermath was ghastly to behold. Once the deluge waters retreated, boulders of every size and shape were dispersed throughout the landscape, where they still rest today and are a great puzzle to geologists, who otherwise can't explain how they came to be there. Vast deposits of mangled trees, along with the bodies of animals and sea life carried far inland, were heaped in huge deposits. These deposits can still be found in the frozen regions of the world, proving that they were hurled there by a giant cataclysm. Huge bodies of water were trapped and formed lakes. In one known instance, the land strait that separated the Atlantic Ocean from the valley and rivers of the Mediterranean was swept away and the sea was formed. Old glaciers melted, new ones were formed. Tropical forests began to grow in mild climates that were once lashed by frigid winds and freezing temperatures.
The Gobi, Sahara, and Mojave regions, then tropical forests, became dry and arid. The continental shelves that once stood above the water were now drowned. The magnetic poles reversed their polarity. Civilizations that existed were buried as deep as 500 feet beneath the surface. It might have taken as long as 20 years before the world became completely stable again. The few humans who somehow survived were faced with a very grim existence, and it was a miracle any of them endured to become our ancestors. Pat set down her cup. The primitive people of the Earth were so badly decimated and fragmented, they kept no record of their activities for thousands of years. Except for the inscriptions by the Amenis, most of which were lost or buried, the only memories of the cataclysm that were passed down came by word of mouth. Only after the early Egyptians, the Sumerians, and the Indus civilization of India reinvented the written language did records and stories of the deluge begin to spread. "Who knows what cities," said Pitt, "what palaces with their archaeological treasures lie scattered on the deep seafloor or buried under hundreds of feet of silt and rock? Except for the inscriptions left by the Amenis, we have no way of assessing the splendor of the distant past before civilizations began rebuilding themselves." Friend had remained silent while each member of the group envisioned the nightmare. He let his eyes rove around the sitting area inside the command truck, curiously observing the expressions of abhorrence in their eyes. Only Pitt's eyes seemed to be composed. It was as if he was contemplating something much different, something far off in the distance. "And thus ends the cataclysm," said Sandecker morosely. Friend slowly shook his head. "I haven't yet come to the worst part," he said, his earlier smile gone. "Only in the past few years have scientists come to realize the major upheavals Earth has experienced in the past, with or without influence by objects from outer space. We know now that a significant impact by a large comet or asteroid has the capability to cause the Earth's crust to shift. Charles Hapgood put forth the theory that because it literally floats on an inner molten core, the crust or shell, which is only 20 to 40 miles thick, can and has rotated around the core's axis, causing great extremes in climate and the movement of the continents. It's called Earth crust displacement, and its consequences can be catastrophic." At first, Hapgood's theory was laughed at by other Earth scientists. Then Albert Einstein focused his intellect on it and ended up agreeing with Hapgood.
"Sort of like the coating of Teflon around a soccer ball," suggested Jaeger.
"The same principle," Friend acknowledged. "Our computer simulation suggested that the impact exerted enough pressure to move the crust. The result was that some continents, islands, and other land masses shifted closer to the equator, while others shifted farther away. The movement also caused the north and south poles to shift from their former positions into warmer climates, unleashing trillions of tons of water that raised the surface of the oceans over almost 400 feet. To give you an example, before the deluge, a man or woman could have walked from London across the English Channel to France without getting their feet wet. In the end, the whole world was rearranged. The North Pole that was in the center of Canada was now far to the north in what is now known as the Arctic Sea. Siberia also shifted north in an incredibly short time span, as evidenced by fruit trees with leaves and woolly mammoths that were found quick frozen, with vegetation undigested in their stomachs that no longer grew within 1,000 miles of that location. Because North America and most of Europe revolved south, the Great Ice Age abruptly ended. Antarctica also shifted south, nearly 2,000 miles from the region it had once occupied in the Southern Sea between the lower portions of South America and Africa.
"Was Earth's orbit affected?" Jaeger asked.
"No, the orbit remained on its present track around the Sun. Nor was the Earth's axis altered. The equator remained where it has been since the beginning. The four seasons came and went as always.
Only the face of the globe has changed.
That explains a great deal, said Pitt, such as how the Amenes could draw a map of Antarctica without its ice mass.
And their city under the ice that the Germans discovered, said Pat. Its climate was habitable before the shift.
What about the Earth's axis of rotation, queried Giordino. Would that change?
Friend shook his head.
Earth's tilt of 23.5 degrees would remain constant. The equator would also remain constant. Only the crust above the fluid core would move.
Sandecker said, If we could get back to the comet for a moment, it's time for you to answer Dirk's question. Were the Amenes and the Wolf family right in predicting a cataclysmic collision with the twin of the comet that struck Earth in 7000 BC?
May I have another cup of coffee? Friend asked.
Certainly, said Lauren, pouring from the pot on the center table.
Friend took a few sips and set the cup down.
Now then, before I answer your question, Admiral, I'd like to describe briefly the new asteroid and comet attack alert system, which came online just last year. A number of telescope facilities and specially designed instruments have been set up in different areas of the world for the express purpose of discovering asteroids and comets whose orbits approach Earth. Already, astronomers manning the facilities have discovered over 40 asteroids that will come unpleasantly close to Earth at some point within its orbit. But detailed calculations reveal that they will all miss by a comfortable margin in the years ahead.
Have they known about the approach of the second comet, said Lauren in dismay, and suppressed any warning of the threat?
No, said Friend. Though the astronomers agreed to keep news of such possible encounters secret for 48 hours, until computer projections could definitely say a collision was imminent. Only when they are certain a collision is imminent would news of the discovery be made public.
So what you are saying, said Jaeger,
is that there is no emergency.
Pitt looked at Friend. Come again?
The event in 7000 BC... explained Friend, was a million-to-one chance occurrence. The comet that struck Earth and the comet that arrived a few days later and missed were not twins. They were separate objects in different orbits that happened to cross paths with Earth at almost the same time. An incredible coincidence, nothing more.
How soon is the second comet due to return? Pitt inquired warily.
Friend thought a moment, then said, Our best guess is that it will fly by no closer than 800,000 miles from us in another 10,000 years.